This intro story comes out of The Verge and was written by Ash Parrish. The latest update to Twitch's community guidelines is oddly specific. According to the update starting March 29th, content that focuses on intimate body parts for a prolonged period of time will not be allowed. The move is, without a doubt, a targeted response to the new Twitch meta, wherein streamers project gameplay onto a green-screened part of their bodies. Specifically, the breasts or the buttocks. Mm. The trend was popularized by Morgpie, a creator known for pushing the boundaries of Twitch's streaming policies. Earlier this month, she streamed herself playing Fortnite with the gameplay projected on her butt. During her stream today, she wore a green screen cutout skirt, making her head and chest the only parts of her a viewer could see. Others capitalized on the new meta by projecting gameplay on various body parts, but with today's announcement, such activity will become a bannable offense. This is the latest in a string of updates in which Twitch has had to play catch-up with the platform's more risque content creators. In December, Twitch relaxed its nudity policy to allow deliberately highlighted breasts, buttocks, or pelvic regions so long as the stream had the appropriate content label. The company immediately rescinded the policy after streamers pushed the boundaries of it, stating, "Upon reflection, we've decided we went too far with the change." Then in January, Twitch updated its guidelines to ban implied nudity of creators, including Morgpie, who streamed themselves at angles that suggested they weren't wearing any clothes. This latest guideline will go in effect March 29th. Lockie.
I think that's incredible. I think streamers are on the forefront. They're the innovators. They are the dream makers. They see the world the way that it truly is and truly should be, and that's why they're trying to... This is all satire, where they're trying to show to Twitter that it is clearly just a porn site now, and the gaming side is falling away, because all those gamers, which was predominantly a younger audience, are now all growing up, and their interests are changing, and so the content creators are changing with it. I think it's crazy, but it's pretty funny. I got no skin in the game. I don't give a fuck what happens to Twitch and what it what it is, but it sounds like a porn site to me.
Anthony, how are you feeling about streamers projecting Fortnite onto their butts?
I'm with Lockie on this. This is a radical new form of entertainment. This is like in the 70s when Hollywood directors started going really fucking nuts and changed the game. This is that. This is the Mogpie is the Francis Ford Coppola of their time. They're really pushing what we can expect to see in entertainment. Will we be limited? Exactly. This is high art. We're pushing the boundaries of what we can expect to see in movies and television, and in this case, streaming content.
That's it. When Belle Delphine sold her bathwater, that was all just an art project. Like, yes, she made a lot of money off it, but that was just a byproduct of what was art, you know?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it kind of is in the... It is kind of satirical, right? Because, like, it is an objectively worthless commodity, and she was able to turn it into something that was extremely lucrative.
Absolutely.
Because she knew that, like, oh, you know, these thirsty fucks will buy whatever I fucking throw out there. Let's just come up with the most ridiculous, pointless, cheapest thing to make and sell that. And she did, and she made money off it. So, you know.
Get it, girl. mad respect. I just love the whole cat and mouse game that they've been playing for a long time. Like, the implied nudity one was a funny one, because, like, literally, I saw clips on Twitter, because of course I did, of boys getting, like, really mad. Video games, I don't want boobies. And, like, literally she'll start, like, you know, putting her hands behind her head.
A certain type of boy, maybe.
I'm about to say, who are these gamers who are, like, less boobs?
Definitely not people who are interested in Stellar Blade, that's for sure. But yeah, absolutely. It was like pretty much everything you could see without showing nipple. It was wild that they relaxed that policy to that point in the first place. But I think Morgpie, get it, girl. Get that.
Absolutely.
Get, you want to fill that morgue pie up.
I feel like female nudity, like, I feel like it's kind of, it is kind of a bullshit double standard how, like, men's nips can be exposed and that's fine and normal, whereas women's nips can't be exposed, and that's where the line is drawn. Like, if the areola is shown, then it's nudity. But if that teeny tiny part of the body is covered up, it's totally fine.
I was gonna say, it's like, you see it in, again, it's weird we're talking about this. It's like movies and TV shows, literally, these, you can have bikini-clad women, like, literally wearing the thinnest of things, but the minute you show a nipple, it's like, that's an MA or an R rating.
Exactly. Boom, nudity.
Get that filth out of here. We don't want our children seeing that. Now, excuse me while I go back to what I was watching. It's like,
And then you throw, like, transitioning persons into it, and that throws it off entirely again. It's like, at what stage during a transition does the nipple turn from appropriate to inappropriate?
Well, that is interesting. Is there a difference between the male and female areolas? I think female areolas are bigger. Correct me if I'm mistaken. I'm not too familiar with the woman's anatomy.
I don't know. I've seen some pepperonis in my time.
Hello and welcome to What Do You Think About This? I'm here with my co-host Naomi. My name's Anthony. And we have on as our guest Zach. It's so nice to be here with you all. We're going to be talking about the recent episodes of Invincible. I'm very much looking forward to getting into it. Let's start the conversation.
I'm so excited as I, Naomi, have watched Invincible. What?
What? So I was about to say, am I still Anthony in this conversation?
I pranked yous. Yous are so pranked right now. This is news to reviews. Oh,
what? But my name is Naomi, and I've lived a whole life as Naomi. What? I have a family. I have pets. I have a career. What is going on?
You got too into character.
You pranked me.
Now, hello and welcome to News to Reviews, your monthly mashup of gaming news and reviews delivered to you the first Friday. Oh my god, first Monday of every month.
I like the alliteration with monthly mashup, first Friday. You just continue on with it, it's fine.
Yeah, I should just start releasing it on a Friday purely to get more alliteration in there. How's it going, Lockie?
Yeah, it's going really well. I've had a whole month to not think about games, and now I've done a whole bunch of thinking about games to get myself ready for this episode. You know, it's funny though, like, I've been playing it's funny, there's a game that I've been playing the absolute fuck out of for the last month, and it's actually coming out of the alpha release in the upcoming week. So it was by pure coincidence, absolutely no effort or professionalism on my part. It's just, it was a really good game that was reviewed, and I've been absolutely loving it, and surprise, surprise, it is actually going to be relevant for once.
Fuck yes. I believe we all have new stuff to talk about this week in impressions, so it's going to be a packed impressions week, that is for sure, but it's also packed here because we're packed with a super great guest. That's right, we have Anthony from What Do You Think About This? Sup?
Hello, it's me again. It's been a while.
I
feel good. Back to talk about games. Back in my proper spot. It's been weird not being on the show.
Yeah, it's been weird for me not being on the show. I feel like every time I'm just out of the swing of it now. So every time I start an episode, I'm just, I don't know, I'm not in the right headspace for it or something. I don't know. Hopefully I get in the flow later on.
I know, every weekend. When it swings by, I, you know, I'm just living my life, and it's like everything's in grey, and I just stare at the microphone and just go, oh, what, looking at the calendar. I've got a big calendar saying, no, no podcast this weekend. This weekend. So it's great. I've never been fitter.
Oh God, I was holding back your gains all this time, Lockie. Holy shit. I'd never want to do that to you. I don't know what it is. My brain just not brain. Maybe it's because we had like an hour of tech difficulties before we started as well too, but my brain is just not brainy. So hopefully I get into the flow of it quickly before we get into the news. Anthony,
oh my gosh, hang on, the podcast is the monthly flow. Oh my gosh.
Hey, oh. Anthony, give us your monthly flow of information and tell us where we can find your podcast.
Yes, you could find my podcast over at what do you think about this podcast? We're on your Spotify, your Amazon, your Apple Podcasts. You can also find us over on the Twitter at WDYTAT Pod. That's where we'll have our extremely, extremely far apart updates on episodes. The future of the podcast is in shambles, folks. Who even knows if another one's coming out?
That's all right. Everyone's future is in, you know, heavy dispute at the moment. So that's it.
Absolutely.
Nothing is written.
Are any of us even really doing this podcast right now?
Think about it. That's a very good point. You know what else is good? Gaming news. And I can't segue anymore. My segues are gone. I'm out of the flow. What the fuck? Let's talk about some motherfucking gaming news.
All right.
Whew. This first story comes out of Insider Gaming, was written by Tom Henderson, and we had some PS5 Pro leakage, with the soon-to-be-announced PS5 Pro expected to hit shelves later this year. Insider Gaming has learned of the developer requirements that need to be met to have the PS5 Pro Enhanced label on it. Internally, this will currently be called the Trinity Enhanced label, but for the sake of SEO, we'll be referring to it as PS5 Pro Enhanced moving forward. The Enhanced label first made its introduction with the PlayStation ecosystem on PS4 Pro, which meant that the game utilizes the Pro's console-improved hardware to improve frame rates and resolution. For the PS5 Pro, PlayStation wants games to offer PS5 Pro exclusive graphics mode that will combine PSSR to upscale resolution to 4K, a constant 60fps, add or increase ray tracing effects. According to documents sent to Insider Gaming, this is possible because the faster RAM, which is 28% faster, and the faster GPU, that is 67% larger than the standard console and 45% faster. The PlayStation says these combined will make the Pro 45% faster than the standard PlayStation 5 and can provide twice the rendering speed of the standard console. PlayStation goes on to continue that games may also be given the PS5 Pro Enhanced label if they offer the following enhancements, like increased target resolution for titles that run at a fixed resolution on a standard console, increased target maximum resolution for titles that run at variable resolution on the standard console, increased target frame rates for titles that target a fixed frame rate on the standard console, and inclusion of PS5 Pro ray tracing effects. But apparently, regardless of any of this, according to Digital Foundry, we shouldn't expect GTA 6 to be able to run at 60fps on a PS5 Pro. So I know I threw a lot of numbers around there, but we're hearing a very similar story by the sounds of it to what we had with the PS4 Pro, and that, like, you know, some games, I'd say definitely the first party Sony games, but then like some other third party stuff as well too, we'll have some more options for people who fork out for the PS5 Pro. Anthony, are you interested in the PS5 Pro at all? Does the idea of having these extra fidelity or frame rate options appeal to you?
I think I am interested. I was very much the same when the PS4 Pro came out, which is like, okay, I can just play the games I want better or more consistent. In terms of like frame rate and resolution and that. But the problem I think we're seeing here is that it's the problem we've been talking about in the podcast a lot, which is that the next gen, or in this case, the current gen of gaming, is kind of behind the expectations we all thought it was going to be. Like, 4K 60 is a lie. And I kind of expected to be. I was expecting 1K 60 to be the way of the future, but apparently some games can't even manage that nowadays, so here we are as a people, I guess. Like, I know Dragon's Dogma got an maybe an update or something. That's like,
oh, we'll talk about the frame rate and Dragon's Dogma later. Don't you worry.
I'll leave that for later.
If Dragon's Dogma is an indication of things to come, it doesn't matter what comes out over the next couple of years.
It's very concerning that, like, the best performing games are the Sony first party ones. Like, your Spider-Man, your God of War, Ragnaroks, all those, they work well. They run it, at least they have an option to run at 60 with, like, some either higher texture or ray tracing sometimes, if you're lucky.
Yeah.
But even then, most of the time, you're, like, standard HD 60 FPS.
Yeah.
Is kind of the benchmark. That is like, all right, can we get it to do this at least?
Yeah, it's because, like, fuck off ray tracing, fuck off realistic shadows, and you've got a well-running game that looks pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's just the reality of the situation. Like, the only games that, I mean, for me at least, the only games that can reach that high fidelity and high visual quality are, like, fighting games, but they're much simpler games. They're not, like, big sprawling environments where you're dashing through, zipping, throwing shit. It's two guys punching each other in a set arena. It's like, it's not as complicated as other games, and that's why they can achieve that high level of resolution and fidelity, like, frame rate wise.
Probably easier to develop code wise because they can just focus on, like, really optimizing and polishing everything.
Absolutely. So, but to get back to the PS4 Pro of it all, I am excited.
What about the PS4 Pro of it all?
Yeah, the PS4 Pro of it all. Which is to say the PS5 Pro of it all. The PS.
Oh,
yes,
no, we haven't even started there. Finish off your thought on the PS4 Pro, and then we'll get to the PS5 Pro.
My long diatribe about the great PS4 Pro. Mwah.
I'm with you. I love tangents, and this has been wonderful.
But yes, to get back to the PS5 Pro, it is nice to hear that, like, yes, it'll be pushing more 4K, although not natively. It'll be upscaled, which is like, eh. Pushing 60 FPS for more games will be nice, but still, again, it's not like a standard. It's not like, you must hit 60. It's like, okay. And then, like, yeah, some of the other things they're mentioning where it's like, higher targeted frame rates for unlocked, it's like, or higher targeted for old targets, it's like, okay, yeah, so frame rates should hopefully be improving is what I'm hearing, which is good to hear. But then, yeah, we get to the final comment about GTA 6, and it's like, so when are we going to actually catch up to games that the biggest gaming release of this generation most likely can't even run well on any modern system, is what I'm hearing. Like, because if the PS5 Pro can't do that, I'm not expecting the Xbox Series Pro to do that either. Like, that'll probably run at a similar, like, we can't hit 60 thing. Which, for a game like GTA, maybe is not as important, but I don't know. It's weird that we still haven't gotten to a point where it's like, yeah, we can hit 60, it's fine.
Sorry, Anthony, I'm getting some audible feedback on my device. I can hear Aaron screaming from, like, an hour away from where I live in response to that comment you just made on the Xbox.
Oh, yeah, no, he's running into the room right now, tackling me. Oh, no. Oh, dear.
Now, Lockie, you obviously own a PS5, but you also have a really awesome gaming laptop. Could you see yourself upgrading your PS5 when the Pro comes out, or you just stick playing on that PC?
Interestingly enough, I feel like this laptop's on borrowed time because it just straight up didn't work for a month. And then just one day I turned it on and it worked. So I don't know. It's haunted or dust. I don't know. Maybe. But it has made me wonder, like, yeah, if my PC shits itself. I haven't even tried running heavy-duty games on it since then, and I probably, I don't know, we'll see. But I think realistically, even the shit on my laptop, like, it was good for its time, but it's falling behind. So it's an RTX 380 on a laptop, and that's not as good as the baseline RTX 380. It's more like runs more like a 360 equivalent for a desktop, and that's starting to be like, you know, if I wanted to play Dragon's Dogma, for example, I think I would still struggle with even that shit, because I'm hearing that even the fourth gen RTX cards, so the 4080 and 90, are struggling with it. So yeah. I don't think my computer's got any shot, which indicates that we're probably going to need... I'm waiting out personally on a big technology boom, because I don't think this is it. I don't think the PS5 Pro is going to, you know, dramatically move things forward or be able to catch up with the big modern games that are coming out soon. So I'm holding my breath and saving my money for the fifth gen RTX series when that comes out, because that'll be out in like a year.
Yeah, I've got a feeling have they been announced?
I think they've been announced for a release next year sometime. So
yeah,
and you know what that means? The fourth gen and the third gen will be really cheap. So could be a good time to get into PC gaming, because I don't see the consoles catching up anytime soon. But who knows? Maybe Microsoft will, you know, finally like come out on top for the next gen, and they come up with the big kahuna. It sounds like let me take a step back with the PS5 Pro, because this is all leaked. So I'm assuming this is not how Sony was intending to spruik and communicate their models and all that jazz. So we take it with a grain of salt. Targeted FPS, all that shit sounds pretty miserable. Sounds pretty realistic and depressing. Doesn't sound like they're shooting for the moon. Certainly not how they marketed their fucking PS5 base. Being able to support 8K. Do you remember that on the box? It had 8K on it. no fucking way that's happening.
God.
I don't know. Until I get more information, at this point in time, I'm kind of happy with the consoles I've got, and I would rather my money go towards a fifth-gen computer, because I just don't think the consoles this... until we get to sixth-gen consoles, I just don't even think it can compete.
Yeah, look, I'm gonna get it, but this is me. I don't I'm not gonna fork out the, you know, fucking thousands of dollars it's gonna cost to get a super good graphics card. As amazing as that would be, I don't have it in the budget at all. So to be able to trade my PS5 in and probably pay like a few hundred bucks and get a updated PS5 with a little bit more bang. In its weight, a little bit more power under the hood, you know, I'm down for that. Some of the stuff here is, yeah, incredibly boring. Like the PS5 Pro Enhanced label sounds like that's just going to be so companies can do the bare minimum to be able to put that on the case. Whereas like the PS5 Pro exclusive graphics mode sounds more interesting. Like they have to make sure they can hit 60 FPS and you have the 4K PSSR upscaling, which is super annoying. The whole, they have to brand it as PSSR. Like, just what's the regular ones, like NSSR or something like that?
DLSS.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
yeah,
just call
you're
it
thinking
that.
Of the USSR. They disbanded quite a while ago.
The PlayStation something of Soviet.
The Soviet nation. Station, yeah.
Yeah. But look, I'm definitely... I've been spoiled at the start of this generation with 60 FPS, and I'd love to see that last right through to the end. But, you know, I loved Red Dead Redemption 2. I loved The Last of Us Part 2. I loved Ghost of Tsushima. All of these I played on the PS4 at 30 FPS, and I had an amazing time. Going back to them playing them at 60 was a lot better, that's for sure. But, you know, I was happy enough with it at the time. So I'm sure I'll be fine with it. But, yeah, fuck, I would have really liked to have seen 60 FPS last the whole generation. I'd much prefer that than just better textures and visuals. I'd rather keep a consistent 60 throughout the whole...
Oh, hell yeah.
Like if that could become the industry standard, I would be very, very happy. But I just don't...
Once you get to that, it's no going back, honestly. It's like...
I think the problem with frame rate is that it doesn't really translate a lot when you show someone a trailer. You know what I mean? Like, whereas if they increase the visuals, people are going to be able to see a trailer and go, oh, that looks really pretty. I'm down for that. But you're not getting to really see how it runs, I guess. I guess YouTube videos a lot of the time do 60, but you feel 60 more when you're actually playing it, not just when you're looking at it.
Yeah, it's a theatrical trick of the eye. It's because movies run at like 24 frames per second or something, and that makes a thing feel more cinematic and more... It's ironically, it feels more professionally done than if it were to run at 60 frames per second on your iPhone or something, which movies could totally be done. And we got that with, I think, Lord of the Rings, the Hobbit. They did that and no one gave a fuck, and everyone was like, yeah, no... We're fine with that.
Yeah, it looked really weird.
Yeah.
Someone who's seen them, it's like, ugh, this is like weirdly smooth.
Exactly, which is terrible for a movie, but amazing for a video game, because the whole idea is physical immersion, and you want to feel like, yeah, you want to feel like the movement and your control has proper weighting, and that can only be done with higher frames. It feels like your character's legit moving slower in 30 frames. It just awful feels really hard to go back to mentally once you've sort of had, you know, you've seen the wizard behind the screen and it turns out being that this little old man that's just been fucking with everyone, manipulating an entire civilization.
If you get a consistent 30, you can deal with it. But if you have like 30 dips or like a weird variable frame rate, it's fucking...
That would be unplayable in my opinion, but yeah.
Locked frame rates are, like, at least locked, so it's, like, eventually my eyes will adjust to the 30.
Yeah.
Whereas, yeah, if it's going up and down, I'm going to be like, all right, we're at 40, and fuck, we're back at 30. Okay,
Yeah.
Well, hopefully when this comes around, it will release at 60. We'll have to wait and see. Oh, we have one of those rare times on the show where we have some good news.
Oh.
And this good news is coming straight out of IGN. It was written by Wesley Yin Poole. In February, Toys for Bob announced plans to spin off from Microsoft-owned Activision to become an indie developer. Toys for Bob are the developers behind Skylanders, the Spyro Reignited Trilogy, and Crash Bandicoot games, and in more recent years have become a Call of Duty support studio. So yes, they've divested and gone out on their own, which is fucking incredible. They're not under the umbrella, under the thumb of fucking Activision Blizzard. Ugh. So at the time, Toys for Bob said it was exploring a possible partnership between our new studio and Microsoft, adding both Microsoft and Activision were extremely supportive of its new direction. While Toys for Bob's first project as an indie studio was apparently in its early days, fans wondered and speculated if it could be a revival of Crash, Spyro, or another IP Toys for Bob has become known and beloved for. Now, according to Windows Central, that partnership is a done deal, with Microsoft agreeing to fund a development of the unannounced game. This new game will be similar to games Toys for Bob has made in the past, Windows Central said, and Microsoft and Toys for Bob are yet to comment. When Toys for Bob announced its independence, it told fans to keep your horns on and your eyes out for more news. Some are taking this as a nod to Spyro the Dragon, and now Microsoft owns Activision Blizzard. It owns all associated intellectual property, including Crash and Spyro. Lockie, Toys for Bob can make their own toys and give them to whoever they want.
Yeah, and also, surprise, surprise, they're going back to doing what it is they've been doing 1,000 times over. So we're likely to get more Spyro and Crash in the future, which is awesome. I'm happy about that. I know I said someone who wasn't so happy about that. Friend of the show, Aaron, really wanted to see something new come out of the studio. And this is coming from the same man who just wants to see like old Doom games be remade endlessly. I don't know, it's just interesting. He's a fascinating individual, that one. I can't wait to get him back on the show for more takes.
Hey, he was on last time, you missed him. It's funny, even when Aaron's not here, it still feels like
his presence
I can
is always
still
felt,
hear him.
Yeah, exactly, like I can always feel him not too far away.
if Aaron's not on the screen, everyone should be asking, where's Aaron?
No, No, good news for all. Spyro, I kind of fell off the Spyro train, but I enjoyed their remake. Their remake of the old games. But yeah, I kind of, after a while, I was like, yeah, these games are kind of limited in how they sort of roll. I'd be hoping for something a little bit different in their new breakaway title, if that is what they're doing. That would be cool. But otherwise, you know, everything they do looks really nice. So I'm kind of happy with whatever this gaming company, you know, puts out there.
That's a pretty chill response. Anthony, are you as chill about this whole situation?
I'm really happy that, yeah, Toys for Bob was able to just, you know, separate themselves and then do whatever they want to do as a studio. It's kind of nice that, yeah, in the recent, like, year or so of this podcast, it's been a lot of, and Microsoft has bought another studio. Yay! I love capitalism. but it's nice to see, like, a studio be able to say, hey, we're still working with you, but we'll be over here if you need us.
Yeah. Can I just say on that point, is it because Aaron has collectively traumatized us in the news to reviews chats, like, on every single acquisition Microsoft has made, and he's like, this is so great, and I'm like, I'm thinking this is the end of, like, everything I know I love, and he's like, this is awesome.
They're gonna bring back every single dormant franchise that was ever dormant.
Every game that I liked that nobody knows exists anymore. They're gonna bring it back, and I'm like, no, they're not gonna bring it back. They just want the mobile shit.
Yeah, let's fingers crossed that this whole deal they're making here isn't the first step in the courtship of eventually buying Toys for Bob. I'd really rather see them stay independent.
I'd like to see them. I honestly, if I'm being honest, I would like to see them branch off and do their own thing.
Yeah.
As much as I'd love another Crash game from them, because they did Crash 4, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. Yeah. So I'd love to see, like, if they did another Spyro game, it's like, that'd be great. If they did, like, a new Crash game, that would also be great. But I also would kind of just like to see them test their, like, you know, test their muscle on their own project. Like, see what they can do with just, like, pure creative freedom, not beholden to, like, well, we have to make a Crash game or we have to make a Spyro game. It's like, no, make whatever you want. Go nuts. Have fun.
Yeah.
So, like, I'm kind of interested in that, even, if just Toys for Bob, now that they're not beholden to Activision, are like, okay, we can just do whatever the fuck we want. We don't need to do that. But either way, I'm happy, because I like their games and I would like to see more from the studio. So, two thumbs up.
Yeah, I am so excited by this news. I was pretty devastated when Toys for Bob were put to working on Call of Duty, because Crash 4 is, like, quite old now. It came out in, like, 2020 or 2021.
Oh,
so it's
God,
not,
it did, yeah.
It's been a few years now, and they've just been another Call of Duty support studio. This team with such talent. Crash 4 is an excellent, excellent platformer. It is really, really good and a lot of fun. Like you, Anthony, I think a new IP would be really cool to see. I understand with the kind of climate that it is, that everything has to be based off an IP. It's either got to be a sequel or a fucking reboot. And hopefully maybe this will be their proving grounds to the next thing they can branch out and be a bit more creative and do whatever it is that they want to do. Or maybe they want to do this. Of the IPs, I got to say, Spyro is probably the one I'd be least excited for. I'd be more excited to see them have a go at Banjo-Kazooie or something like that.
Oh, my God. Yeah, they would be the best, like, Rare
they would actually,
revival
yeah.
company, for sure.
It'd be really cool. Or just more Crash. There's more they could do. I'd love to see them do more Crash. But, hey, a Spyro game, I'll take it. They were pretty fun, but going back to Spyro, the Spyro remakes, you could tell that Crash was definitely the superior platformer from the PS1 Sony days, that's for sure. And that's coming from someone who loves the fuck out of Insomniac. But yeah, this warms my heart, this news, and I can't wait to see what Toys for Bob comes out with. I just only hope it's not going to be exclusive to Xbox. That would be a little bit annoying, but who knows? Xbox has been playing nice. Ooh. Speaking of playing, that's a bad segue, because this isn't really playing nice. It's some weird news. I'm curious to see what you guys think about this one.
You're being 90s sarcastic, ironic. Speaking of playing nice. There you go.
Well, look, it's not... It doesn't even work that way. I'll just explain. Oh. So a studio we all know and love, Larian Studios. The head of Larian Studios, Sven Vink, was at the Game Developers Conference this year, also known as GDC, more colloquially. And they stated that Larian will not be working on any DLC or expansions for Baldur's Gate 3, and they will not be making another game in the Baldur's Gate universe, at least for now, but they didn't really even hint at any more possibilities at all in the future. Thankfully, IGN managed to sit down with Vink for an interview afterwards to sort of clarify everything a bit more and see why they wanted to. So they asked why they wanted to move on from Baldur's Gate and Baldur's Gate 3, and Vinky responded, well, we started actually thinking about it after Baldur's Gate 3 because of all the success. The obvious thing to do would have been to do DLC. So we started on one and we started thinking about Baldur's Gate 4, but we noticed very rapidly that our hearts were not ticking faster. We hadn't really had closure on Baldur's Gate 3 yet, and just to jump forward into something new felt wrong. We also had spent a whole bunch of time converting the system into a video game, and we wanted to do new things. There are a lot of constraints in making D&D, and the 5th edition is not an easy system to put into a video game. And we had all of these ideas of new combat that we wanted to try out, and so they were not compatible. You could see the team was doing it because everybody felt like we had to do it, but it really wasn't coming from the heart, and we're very much a studio all about being from the heart. Oh, this warms my heart. That's what got us into misery all the time, but also been the reason for our success. So I went on a holiday for Christmas and I came back and I said to the team, you know what? We're just not going to do it. We're going to shift around and we're just going to start doing these other things that we talked about that we were going to do that we actually planned on doing before we started Baldur's Gate 3.
Boom, Divinity 3. Woo!
We always said those were the plans for afterwards. We have two games that we want to make and we have lots of concepts. So let's just have closures on Baldur's Gate 3. So what was the studio's reaction? Vink said that they were elated. I was surprised. I thought they were going to be angry at me because I just couldn't muster the energy. And I saw so many elated faces, which I didn't expect. You could see they're all shared the same feeling, so we may be very well aligned with one another. Since then, I've had many, many, many developers come to me afterwards and say, thank God. So we're not going to be getting Baldur's Gate 3, but it sounds like Baldur's Gate 4, sorry, or any Baldur's Gate 3 expansions, but it sounds like that is not what Larian wants to be doing. Lockie, what are your thoughts here on Sven Vink's and the studio's decision to not continue with Baldur's Gate?
I'm stoked. That Divinity Games was so fucking good. And Baldur's Gate 3, you know, they made it amazing and excellent, but I strongly believe that the gaming systems and the combat systems that they come up with in the Divinity series, to be honest, 2 is kind of a hit and miss. I don't really like the no status effects until you strip away armor. That's shit. But if they can bring it back to number 1, where it's like a probability, you know, you got a percentage chance of it landing and hitting and, you know, resistances and shit, then that stuff is amazing. And the gaming company has now just had a huge amount of money injected into them. They've been able to develop all of this new infrastructure. They've got all this amazing visual effects and stuff. I can't wait to see how that manifests itself into a new Divinity game. Who knows? Maybe they're sick of Divinity, but I don't think so. I think that was their plan originally, but they landed the big Baldur's Gate 3 deal, and so that got put on the back burner so they could all make a shit ton of money, which they've done. And yeah, hopefully they're gonna give us more of that good shit.
Ooh, how you feeling about this, Anthony?
I'm very much the same as Lockie. Would it be nice to see another Baldur's Gate? Of course, but we just got Baldur's Gate, and I think it would be better for the studio to either go back to Divinity 3 and like use what they've learned from Baldur's Gate 3 to improve on Divinity 2 and make an even better game, or potentially branch out to a completely new franchise, explore some new ideas. I think you and I were talking about, like, we would love maybe, like, a cyberpunk setting for, like, this kind of system in Baldur's
Gate.
Oh,
God, no, not that. Not that. That's a death knell. That completely ruined the other Swedish company. No, not that.
They're Polish.
Anything but that.
Cyberpunk.
Oh, sorry. Polish.
Whatever they are, they're ish, that's for sure.
All right, let's just say Eastern European sort of
region.
Yeah, that's
a Eastern
company.
European company.
Yeah,
is
no, no.
They don't mix.
No, no, that absolutely killed them. Stick to what you know. Don't do completely opposite different. Like, you can branch out a little bit, but don't just completely, like, go in a different direction. It costs too much, and it's too high a gamble as to whether or not it'll pay off.
Mm. Nah, I'd fucking love to see some sci-fi. I'd love to see some sci-fi from the Larian's writers. That'd be amazing. Just God, I'm so excited by this news. I just love the philosophy that Sven Vink has here, and the culture that they apparently have at the studio. Apparently at GDC as well. He also made a comment about all the firings and stuff that's going on. They haven't had a massive amount of layoffs over at Larry, and he's like, it's because we keep everything within scope, and we make sure that we don't hire more than what we need, and that way we're not having to fire a whole bunch of people for our bottom line and then rehire them next year when we need all the talent again to ramp up for the next game. And not to mention, he mentions about how there's institutional talent that you lose over time when you keep doing these rounds of firings over and over again. So I just love their whole philosophy over at Larian, and to know that they're just following their heart and their creative passion, that's so cool. Another Divinity, awesome. If that's what they have a vision for, I'll eat that up. Num, num, num. Because at the entire time playing Divinity 2, I'm thinking, fuck, if they could just bring all the quality of life shit and the better cinematics and stuff over from Baldur's Gate, this would be another 10 out of 10 strategy RPG. It is so much fucking fun. I love Divinity 2, and it's got so many cool stories in there to tell as well too. But yeah, I'd love to see a new, completely new idea from them, like either a sci-fi or just some other kind of fantasy setting, whatever it is. I just love to see a fucking strategy RPG set in the Old West. That'd be fucking awesome. Like any of this shit where they can tell some cool stories, I'm all down. So yeah, I'm gonna be watching Larry, and you've got yourself a lifelong fan now. I'll pretty much buy anything that they put out next. If it's a fucking rhythm game, I'll fucking play it. Whatever. Let's go.
I'm just like, I'd love a good sci-fi game, but no one does it well, and it keeps failing. And so I would rather just the game companies that have establish themselves as being competent and having all of the assets and infrastructure in different areas to branch out. And, you know, they can branch out a little bit, but like, if you go from medieval fantasy infrastructure to sci-fi, you need to build everything from the ground up.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I just think it's,
you're right. It's a big ordeal, but pie in the sky, I'd love to see it. It'd be really, really cool.
Yeah, but that's how you end up with, you know, having to hire a whole bunch of people that know how to develop that stuff and can design that stuff really well, and then having to fire them, you know, on mass scale when the game doesn't do as well as you projected. Like, that's how you end up with that shit. Yeah. So, you know, you can change a little bit, but if you change too dramatically, if it doesn't pay off, bad things. And also, I end up not getting a very good game, so you know, I have a vested interest.
Yeah, Cyberpunk really burnt you, damn.
Because it sucked. It was so boring. It was just a walking narrative game. The frames per second stuff were interesting, but like, there was so few and far between. And like, after a couple of hours, I was just like, I'm done. Hey, Goober, where's the game? I'm just playing Blade Runner, the movie, and that's not a very good movie.
Yeah, that start is there's a lot of narrative going there at the start, that's for sure.
Shots fired, cult following, I get it. I love the aesthetics, but the movie itself is boring. I fell asleep in year 9 when I was made to watch it, and yeah, I'm falling asleep playing these sorts of games.
I'm going to be, it's not only Aaron who's approaching your house, I'm coming.
Yeah, I know. Well, someone's got to be controversial out here. We're being too chill.
That's true.
God, Larian doing a Dune game, that'd be really cool. Fuck.
Ooh.
Yeah, holy shit.
Now we're cooking.
Yeah, sorry, Lockie. I'm going to keep dreaming and then keep ruining the industry as I do.
Yeah, I know. It's shit like that. It's just why we don't have any more Witcher games.
Well,
congratulations.
I wonder if there'll be any Witcher games coming up in the next month. Spoilers, there's not. We have Broken Roads coming to all platforms except for Nintendo Switch on April 10th. I believe that's an Australian RPG. We have a game... I'm not sure if I should bother mentioning it. I haven't heard anything really interesting about it. It's called, like, Inkbound or something. I don't know. So it's coming to PC. Coming to PC. It's a tactical RPG. It's leaving early access April 10th. Europa is coming to PC April 16th. Grounded is coming to PlayStation and Nintendo Switch platforms also April 16th. Also on April 16th, we have Planet of Lana is coming to PlayStation and Nintendo Switch platforms as well. These were both Xbox exclusive previously. Final Fantasy 16 The Rising Tide expansion is coming April 18th. If people want to jump back into Final Fantasy 16, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Wrath of the Mutants is coming to all platforms April 23. Apparently a beat-em-up. Demon Slayer Kimetsu no Yaiba? Sweep the board? Fuck me. Why do you have three titles? I don't know. It's
Demon
coming to Nintendo
Slayer,
Switch.
Shitty, low-effort, cash grab.
It's a board game. Coming a party the... board game. What the fuck? Coming April
26th. Oh, so really, so extremely low effort cash.
What the fuck is it? Like, is that like a Super Mario
that's what
Party
everyone...
clone?
Isn't it like that's, a, it's like a shonen where it's about like samurais and fighting demons with swords. Jesus.
Hey. I'll say this. It's better than another fucking arena fighter. I'm tired of that. At least if you're going to do low effort shit, fuck it. Make an anime Mario Party. At least I'll have more fun with that than a fucking arena fight. I'm tired of arena fights.
I think don't give them an inch. They take a mile. Like, we can't tolerate this shit coming from, you know, the shitty cash grab in the anime field. Release a good quality game like, you know, Naruto Generations and all that stuff. They're good quality, so that's fine. They get a pass. Everything else sucks.
I mean, I think it's made by the same studio who made the Generations games.
Oh, well, that's interesting, but also sad because it's a board game. That sucks.
Yeah, it's a bit weird.
Board games are lame.
Well, hopefully this game's not lame. Sandland is coming to all platforms except for Nintendo Switch April 26th. I believe the anime has just come out, the first like 7 or 8 episodes or something, and it's...
Yeah, just dropped on Disney+.
So is that like Kyle Sanderland's game?
What's that?
Kyle Sanderland. It's like a game. Sandland.
What was your question?
This is Australian.
No, I was just saying, I think apparently it reviewed quite well, and it's the same creator, the gentleman who passed away recently, who was behind.
Yes, this is an Akira Toriyama joint.
Yeah. And then finally, Stellar Blade is coming to PS5 only April 26th. Anthony, any of those titles stand out to you?
In particular, the last two I'm interested in. I'm interested in, Sandland and Stellar Blade.
Oh, you're not interested in the board game?
No.
No.
Just because I said it was different doesn't mean I care.
Yeah, it's different, bad.
I also have limits. I'm really interested in Sandland. I'm not sure how well it'll translate to a video game. From what I understand, it was a very short series of like manga, and then it got made into an entire anime. It's only 7 episodes, so it's not particularly long, so I'm not sure how you translate that into a long or sprawling video game, so who knows.
So yes, Sandland, from what I've seen of the gameplay, looks like kind of like Borderlands but anime. And with more of a focus on vehicles, you can like upgrade the vehicles and customize them, and they have weapons, and there's a lot more vehicle combat, whereas it was very minimal in Borderlands. So, I don't know, it could potentially be cool.
Could be fun. Yeah. But yeah, and then obviously Stellar Blade, I think, is everyone's most excited game this month. I don't know what else is coming out that you could really be that excited for. Maybe if you really like Final Fantasy 16 and you want to play the expansion, or
I love parts of 16, but I don't want to play the expansion.
Yeah, but like, I guess Planet of Lana and Grounded do have a little bit of hype behind them, so probably that, but like, really, it's Stellar Blade. This is the month of Stellar Blade.
Yeah, like the Twitter before it, where you're seeing video games and female sexuality combine. Stellar Blade seems to be, it seems to be another manifestation of that sort of thing.
Mm.
Having your cake and eating it too.
And if anyone out there is interested in Stellar Blade, there may perhaps be a cheeky, demo available on PlayStation 5 now. You can download for free and play, and we might be talking about that later on in Impressions. Lockie, did any of those titles stand out to you?
The board game one. Because I think it's so lame. I think it's just the lamest fucking shit. Whenever an anime franchise gets a video game, they're normally, for the most part, terrible. You get a few rare exceptions like Naruto, Generations, they're all good. But board games, boo, fuck it. Thank you, next.
Yeah. It's unique, but I don't know if it'll be good.
Yeah, it's unique, bad. It'll be shit.
Lockie, I definitely recommend you check out Stellar Blade. Like, you like Devil May Cry, you like Sekiro. It's like a weird mixture of those. Definitely consider it, for sure. And it runs at 60 as well, too.
Lovely.
You will have to stare at a woman's ass the entire time. Yeah. I know that's off-point.
Unfortunately, it's a bit of a... You know, it puts me into the neutral area, so it's not as... but hey, I enjoyed Bayonetta I enjoyed Bayonetta without having any skin in the game sexuality wise, so you know, I can do it. It's just I would prefer if it were a male.
You get them dick physics going, let's go. Mm-hmm. Your game does have dick physics. Baldur's Gate 3.
It does.
Game of the year last year, that's for sure.
Come on, Divinity 3. Put those dick physics to work.
Dick physics.
Give us dicks or we riot.
And that'll do us for the games coming up in the next month. It's time to talk about the games that we've been playing. Anthony, you're our guest. What have you been playing this week, my friend?
It's a game. A game. Is it, though? It's a demo of a game that I will be excited to talk about probably next month if I come on, or depending on when I'm next on, which is the Stellar Blade demo.
Ooh.
I haven't, unfortunately, been playing any new games recently because I finally got around to finishing Elden Ring. So that was most of my time sink this last month, was just fucking beating that game.
Mm-hmm.
Finally did it. But I decided this week, when they announced the demo was coming out, I decided to pick it up and play it. And I got through it. It's, I think, an hour and a half total, maybe 2 hours, depending on how quickly you go through it. Mm. I'll say this. If you don't die once, you could get through this in under an hour. I think I died twice, and I had to go back like 5 or 10 minutes each time. And it's like, okay, you could do this in an hour if you just didn't die like once. Especially if you're playing on like the story mode difficulty, which is probably super easy. I have no idea. I was just playing on whatever the normal difficulty was. I don't think there was a hard option for the demo at the moment.
Oh, there would be lots of hard options playing that game, that's for sure. Anthony, so you're someone who is super pumped for Stellar Blade, and you are planning on having the day off when it comes out at the end of April. How's the demo left you feeling? Are you more excited for the end of April, or has it tempered your expectations? How are you feeling?
It's a bit interesting. It has done both, which is weird. Weird. It's weird because I'll say this: when I initially it was a roller coaster of emotions playing this demo, because it started off, it had this like, okay, it has a bunch of pretty cut scenes with showing off the power of the PS5 and all that, yada yada. I was like, okay, this is fun. Opening sections, very action-packed in terms of visuals and stuff going on in the background. It's like, ooh, okay. Is this what the game's kind of going to be like? And then you get, like, in a boss fight and yada yada yada. And then, like, your character gets knocked out and she wakes up, like, a few days later and we start on the actual main game. At which point we go to, like, the most cookie cutter apocalyptic town. And I was like, fuck me, is this going to be the whole game? I was like, oh no, I've bet the wrong horse. Because it was like, it gave me, I played Destiny and Destiny 2, and some of the locations in that game, I'm like, fuck me, I'm bored. Because it's just like buildings that are slightly down and like tree vines growing off of shit. And it's like, fuck me, I'm bored. This is a boring looking location.
Yeah, you've seen this before.
It gave me a bit of that. It gave me a bit of that.
Shitty Horizon.
Yeah, it's shitty Horizon, shitty Last of Us. It's just, yeah, I've played in a post-apocalyptic game before. I get it. There's ruins and shit. There were some neat traversal moments where the game had a bit more traversal than I might have expected from it. It does have the iconic yellow paint here so you know where to go.
Yeah.
Which fucking made me laugh. I was like, wow, we're still doing this. All right, cool. Good to know.
What is that? I don't understand.
It was like a meme. It became a huge meme like a few years ago. I think particularly because Final Fantasy VII Remake had it in like the worst possible way, which was just anytime you needed to go anywhere, there was just thick splotches of yellow paint. So it's like, go here. Here's the route you go to go to the next part of the game.
I think I turned that off. I can't even remember there being a thing.
It's the way that games use to signal that you can climb a particular thing in games where you can't just climb everything.
Oh, okay, yeah, I see what you mean, yep.
Yeah. It's just funny to me because I was like, wow,
it's how I got through Golem.
Yeah, it's like, all right, we're still doing this.
Yeah, sometimes they just, you know, they get a bit more creative with it. Like in God of War, it's like etchings that Atreus' mother had left behind. You know what I mean? Whereas like, if the most boring way to do it is like, yeah, we'll just slap some yellow paint there. People see the color yellow and they know that means.
It was like, even if it was like, you know, it's a post-apocalyptic science fiction future. If you put like a little like light rail or something, so it's like, oh, it's a light, I can climb it or something. Instead, it's like, no, in this apocalyptic world where there's all these monsters running around, people are going, yeah, but I want to spray paint the ledge so that I know I can go up it next time. It's like, all right. But getting to the more positive side of things, the combat was really fun, the little bit that I played of it, because again, it's only about an hour, you probably do about 40 minutes or so of actual combat. The combat's about what I expected, in the sense that, yeah, you know, it's, you got a light attack, you got a heavy attack, you get powered up moves you can unleash on your opponents, you've got dodges, you've got parries. It's like, that's all very fun, but I think the looking at just the what's the term, the skill tree, looking at all the options it can give you, I'm like, ah, okay, so this is why the combat is maybe not great right now, is that looking at all these options, this is where the fun of the game is how you approach combat, because there's things like your opponents have like impossible to block moves, so you have to dodge them. You can get an upgrade that gives you a dash where you go behind them and you get a free attack on them if you time it perfectly. It's definitely going to be a game of trial and error figuring out
Sekiro.
A little bit. It's like, yeah, Devil May Cry, Sekiro, as we kind of mentioned.
A bit of Nier Automata in there as well.
A little bit. Especially with the big anime butt right in my face. But yeah, it's like, there's like a lot of systems there that I think will be really fun. And that's where I think the game, and that's where I'll say, that's why it's like, I was a bit, it's like, oh, my hopes were lowered by like, oh, this is the environment, this is the first environment you're showing off, okay. Some of the enemy designs were like, okay, that's a bit neat, but some of them were like, eh, okay, that's just a guy with spikes. And then like the final boss fight was a bit fun. And some of the other things were kind of cute and neat about the world. But I could definitely tell they wanted to keep a lot of this for the main game, because once you finish the demo, they have this quick little trailer showing off all the things you can do in the later game, and I'm like, well, fuck me, that looks great. Like, that's the fun. That's the part I'm interested in, is all this crazy bullshit you get to do in later game. Like, you get a new weapon, you get, like, all these new mechanics, it seems. There was one moment where, does anyone care if I just spoil what happens in that, like, trailer? Or has anyone played?
Yeah, look, it's the demo. It's the very start of the game. All this, I feel like it's fine to mention all this stuff.
Okay.
I don't know. It's a very
I'll just
intro.
Drop it because like this was the moment where I was like, holy shit, I got to see when this comes up. Is there's a moment where she like jumps off a cliff or like jumps off a thing and then puts her sword and she starts skating on like a pipe and like doing this. I'm like, what the fuck? Ooh, when does that come into play? Where it's like, when do I get to skate in this game? It's like, okay, I kind of love this. So that's where that's the roller coaster of emotions I went on with this demo was, it's like, okay, really nice, interesting opening scene, a bit boring, bland location for the second one, fun combat, okay boss, and then finally with the trailer being like, all right, I'm back in again, like yes, I do want to play more of this.
Yeah,
the combat has me hooked, the all these worlds and other areas that I get to explore later look way more interesting and a lot more fun, so those have me hooked. The characters have not much to go on right now, so I'm not gonna comment on that. It's a demo. It's like, oh no, I got to spend an hour with these people. That tells me nothing about
We don't really get to spend much time with anyone, really. It's just Adam and Eve, really. So Eve's the name of the protagonist, and then Adam saves her at the very beginning when she gets knocked out or whatever.
This game's very subtle.
Spoilers. This is the Bible. Oh my god.
It's literally the how the game starts.
Oh my god. They're going to go to the tree of knowledge and have the forbidden fruit.
The earth tree.
It.
Yeah, I played the demo as well too, Anthony. And I had a lot of fun with it as well. It took me a bit to click with the combat, but at the end of the demo, there's a brief sort of boss fight. And by the time it took me a few turns to beat it, but by the time I did, the combat clicked for me and it felt very satisfying. That parry felt very satisfying. My only issue is that the perfect dodge, I don't like the timing window for that. I'm used to a perfect dodge being right before they hit you, but this you have to do the dodge as they hit you, like it's a parry, but just with a different button. And it just did not feel right to me.
I'll say, on mine, I didn't have that issue at all. I kind of felt it was like just before or just then. You had like two. You could either do it like, because if I did it way before, it would hit me. And if I did it right on or right after, actually they would hit me as well.
Okay.
Like there was the one enemy that really helped me get the perfect dodge and the parry down was the squid one, the one that like corkscrewed up and went past you. It's like, because that's easy to dodge. You dodge to the side and then you just go whoop, and then you do the thing. The big problem I have with that is like, I feel like I need to get a better hang on how to respond to perfect dodge, where it's like, oh, I perfectly dodged. How the fuck do I hit them? They're all the way over there.
Oh, you just gotta hold triangle and then you have the rush attack where you rush up to them. but I don't know. It felt weird to me. I think because in this you kind of teleport when you do a perfect dodge, so you're kind of dodging through them in a sense. And I didn't like the very first boss that you fight, you haven't unlocked perfect dodge at this point, so you can't even dodge his attacks. And you're supposed to die in that fight anyway, so it doesn't really matter, I guess. But I don't like a situation where I just straight up can't beat something without a particular upgrade. Just give me all the dodges and the counters. Why do I have to unlock dodges and counters? It's a little bit annoying.
Because you're not strong enough yet. You need to train and get good.
The skill tree was interesting, and it looks like they have some actual interesting skills to unlock later on rather than just, you know, stuff to get up to par, I guess. I'm excited for Stellar Blade. The story was just nonsense. At the very start, they're throwing at you, oh, we've got to go take down the head Natibar or some shit.
The Alpha name.
The Alpha, that's right. And it's like, okay, all right, this is just all going to be lots of proper nouns and lots of bullshit.
It's all red pill stuff. Gonna take down the Alpha. Does that mean you're an Omega? What is it? What are you, Sigma? Are you Sigma and you're doing the Sigma grind?
Yeah, that's it. You're on that.
Oh my god, you are the Sigma grind because you have to Sigma grind your XP to get the right skills to be on perfect dodge.
That's it. You're on that Sigma mind grind set.
Cool.
Where are these Sigma females?
The combat fun, the environments look pretty cool, but look, it's not something that I'm super, super pumped for, but I had a lot more fun in that brief demo than what I have had in my entire time so far with Dragon's Dogma 2. So
Well, that's exciting.
Yeah.
I'm kind of interested alone because it sounds like there's a lot of Sekiro sort of mechanics going on there, and you guys only got to play the demo in you know, shitty story mode, kid mode. So I'm excited to see if there's a bit of a challenge there.
Played it in normal mode, so yeah.
I played it, yeah. No, there is a story mode. I don't think either of us played it in that.
Yeah.
If I did, I think I would have hated it.
Two modes? Yeah. Is there a, do you know if there's going to be a hard mode?
There, I think there is in the actual game, but like,
yeah,
nothing's
okay.
been announced here.
It definitely wasn't Sekiro difficulty, though. No fucking way. I died a few times, but yeah, nothing.
Yeah, I think
crazy.
I died like three or four.
Should I just pick up Sekiro again? Fuck it.
Do it. You know you want to. Yeah. I definitely
am. Well, I'm just so sick of all these games that are like trying to be Sekiro, but not getting there. No. Maybe I should just play Sekiro again. Maybe there's some mods I can to jazz it up.
Or pick up the demo of Stellar Blade so you can tell us what you think about it. I want
to
know.
I've just heard what to think about it. I don't need to pick it up.
I want
to
know your opinion, though, Lockie.
I don't know. My opinion's the same as yours. It's all right. It seems like promising. There's some good and some bad.
Yeah.
Take it all, and there you have.
There you go.
The facts of life.
Anthony, do you have anything left to say on the Stellar Blade demo?
Only thing I'm going to mention is, because I do this every time, even when I'm playing demos, I always like to go and check what the settings for the games are so I can get an idea of what I'm getting into it.
Mm-hmm.
I found this very interesting. Among the many gameplay settings, there was like, you know, performance mode, balance mode, visual mode. One of the options was, do you want the ponytail long or short? And I was like, does that
long
affect place. Gameplay? Like, I guess,
no, long.
Like, I guess, like, it does affect, like, because if her hair's just, you know,
can sort of get
wishing
in the way.
Around all the time, it will affect the gameplay. But like, what? Surely that's a customization.
The same thing in Xenoblade 3, and it's always the long, crazy anime hair that's impossible to have in real life. Of course.
Her hair was flipping and dipping sometimes. I did notice in certain cutscenes where it's like, this is clearly real time because she like rolled out of the way and it was like, for a second.
I love that shit. If you're going to play an anime game, you might as well go for broken, like, you know, go with the style that's impossible to really nail if you're trying to do it IRL. So.
One thing I will mention that I've never actually even played a Bayonetta game, but I enjoy purely from just what I've seen of Bayonetta is that Eve is a terribly boring character and feels very much like she was just sort of made to be kind of ogled at. Like during the gameplay, she's a badass, right? You're controlling her and you're doing all this cool swordplay shit. And then it cuts to a cutscene and she's just constantly like whimpering and whining. There was like one scene where she takes down a boss with the help of someone else, but every other cutscene, it was just always, yeah, I don't know, just like it's so bland and just so pathetic. Whereas, you know, like 10 seconds of Bayonetta and she's like fucking sexy and powerful and charismatic. I just wasn't getting that with Eve at all. She's just a
boy. Well, that's because she's beta. She was a beta. She's not alpha. We know that.
Okay, yes. So Adam's the Sigma. Okay, and she's she's the beta.
All accurate. This is all canon. Because yeah, I'll say that is my final thought, I guess, is that, and I was kind of expecting this, which is that I don't think Eve will be that interesting a main character. Who knows? Maybe the entire rest of the game, she goes on a great arc. But
great.
It very much feels like, hello, I'm strong woman. I hit you. Oh, no, I'm scared again. Oh, no, but I'm strong. Oh, no, I'm scared, but I'm strong. I'm scared and I'm strong.
I liked Tacky.
Yeah, Tacky.
I think her name was Tacky. Tacky was cool for the...
I thought, like, yeah, she's definitely dead, guys. Wink.
Okay, one of those situations.
She gets her arm cut off, and then she gets stabbed, and her body is left behind. Like, she is 100% coming back as a boss, where it's like, that person, they've got a mechanical arm.
Yeah.
I wonder who it could be. Could literally be anyone.
Like, yeah.
I know. That's it's fun. Like, I know game design, and I know, like, especially what I know is I know anime bullshit. Like, I know it's a Korean game, but I know my anime bullshit. It's like, this reeks of best friend killed in prologue comes back as villain.
Yeah,
like,
okay, yeah.
Fucking, I've read this. I know this.
Oh,
it's
fuck.
Like,
there's another
it's like,
game.
It's so, recently, it's so easy to see. It's like, I mean, speaking of Bayonetta, it's like, she has her friend Jawn, and it's like, oh, geez, I wonder where she is for the whole game. It's like, oh, she's the, like, character we have to fight? Who fucking saw that coming?
Yeah, the same thing happens in Immortals of Avium, spoilers for that game that no one played or cared about. Oh, dearie me. Yeah. Alrighty, well, yeah, Stellar Blade. I think people who are interested in Stellar Blade for the reasons that you're interested in it, you're gonna like Stellar Blade. Like, it's ticking the boxes, it's delivering what it's promising. I don't think anyone was sitting there expecting a Oscar-worthy narrative.
In my mind, I've already given it a 7 out of 10 just listening to you guys talk about it.
Hey, you like Devil May Cry, and like you'll definitely
You're not talking about it in the same energy that, let's say, someone playing Devil May Cry 3 for the first time would be talking about.
But I didn't like Devil May Cry, so it's not my vibes. So
gross.
Yeah,
he's allowed to be wrong.
Tell me about Inkbound, Lockie.
Okay, well, Inkbound is a lot like Devil May Cry in the sense that it's a really good game.
I'm wishlisting it now.
Some weirdo contrarian prick comes out of the woodwork saying that they don't like it, whatever. So walk it back. Inkbound is a turn-based tactical sort of RPG roguelike game. It has a roguelike cycle. You go through it, you go through your stories and worlds, different looking environments, different looking bad guys, and you pick up some things along the way, which allows you to vary your attacks and your overall builds. And that is essentially the game, rinse and repeat. It has a story to it, although I have not given it one second of attention. I mashed that X button to get through all of that shit. But I think it's trying to go for a bit of a Hades feel with its story, and that's about all I can tell you about it. It probably doesn't hit the same level of quality that Hades did by a long shot, but that's sort of what they're going for. Take it or leave it. I left it and just focused on the gameplay itself. Now, the gameplay is interesting. This is coming from the same developers. I can't remember their name. That did Monster Train. And if anyone's played Monster Train, that was an absolutely 10 out of 10, fantastic, innovative, kind of halfway tower defense, halfway roguelike, card-based game that just was phenomenal. And to be honest, I don't think it's quite hitting the same levels as Monster Train. They've tried to go in a very different direction in terms of their art design and graphics. So they've moved from a very 2D sort of story style, very simple sort of game design-wise to something a little bit broader that's all in 3D. And you can tell that it's certainly new technology that they're sort of dealing with. The character models are all very simple, all very basic and clean. So on the positive, and you could easily say, you could easily play the game and go, well, I'm dealing with graphics from like Warcraft 3 era. Time, but clean. So it's one of those things where it's not going to wow you in terms of its graphical capability, but in terms of the type of game that it is enough to keep you engaged throughout. And where the core of the game is entertaining is in its roguelike. So this is a weird roguelike in the sense that not only can you level up your character's skills and abilities throughout as you progress, and it's got some really fun, nice, interesting ways that it does that, but it also stacks on top of that this equipable items build where you find items at varying levels and qualities that dramatically change your character and either enhance or take your character in a very different direction as to how you intended to play it based on what you're sort of finding. And it is so satisfying. And then they add on top of that another layer where if you get certain amounts of the same sort of set, then you get some really crazy power-ups. So it's got a lot of layers to it where not even Slay the Spire has this level of layers in terms of collectibles and things you can sort of do, which keeps it very fucking interesting and entertaining. So the challenge is there. Yep.
Are the items kind of like boons in Hades so that, you know, you can get further boons in the same category and that'll enhance the main boon that you have?
Kind of. So the boons are more like the power ups that you get to your abilities, and it has that, but it has a different element where it's like equipable items. Where on top of that, you've got six to seven items. I can't remember that you can hold on to at any given time. And then at the end of each world, and you go through about three or four worlds, you can either choose to burn those items and keep the extra bonuses, regardless of what the item did, as stackable traits, so you can get more and try and increase to the end of that tree, or you can hold on to a certain amount of items if they're so critical because of this specific thing that they give you. So it's got about three different layers of things that you can mix and match in terms of your roguelike, on top of what you would normally expect in these types of games, which makes it so fucking interesting. So, and because of that, I'm totally cool with overlooking, like, you know, graphics, not really all that great. Story, whatever. But the gameplay, fuck, they know how to do a good roguelike grind, and this game has it. So I came across this game out of the blue on Steam in beta mode because it was getting really good reviews back then, overwhelming, positive. You know, I think it only cost me like $20 or $30, which is definitely well worth what you're getting for this type of game. If you like roguelikes, this is a no-brainer. Fucking get it. Yeah. If I were to give it a review right now, I'm very interested because I've played it in beta and I think it's a fucking solid game in beta. So I'll be very excited to see it come out in its proper release in a couple of weeks from now. And who knows, it could be changed dramatically or it might not change all that much. But at the moment, for me, I'd say this is an 8 out of 10 roguelike.
That's good to hear, yeah, because I've been playing, you know, Slay the Spire, Hades. I play them sometimes.
Yeah, amazing games.
Yep. Yeah, like an hour or so to myself just to go through a run and see what happens. So, yeah, it's like, it's really nice to see, you know, not necessarily new, because, yeah, they, as you said, they already did Monster Train, but it's nice to see, like, a new approach or, like, a new little thing you add on to a roguelike. And it just, as you said, it can completely change the way the game works. Just that small thing of, all right, we're going to flick this so that now these items do this. It's like, that. I was playing against Slay the Spire last night. I had this infinite loop shit going where it's like, all right, I play this card, which activates this, which gives me this, which allows me to do this. It's like, that's when the roguelike, again, those elements get really fun, where it's just the run gets so perfectly put together, you get all this shit going perfectly, and it's just, yeah, it's great. And I probably will check this out. When's it coming out, like full release again?
I think it's coming out on the 10th of April.
PC only though at the moment.
Still I might check it out if it, I mean, I'm sure it won't take that much to run it on a PC.
Low graphical.
And I think Monster Train eventually came to Switch. I'm not sure if it came to PlayStation. So there'll be a way you can play it on console eventually, hopefully. If it does well enough, which hopefully it will. From the sounds of it.
Presumably it will. I think these games tend to do very well in terms of indie games because they give you so much replayability as opposed to some other indie games, which, like, I love some indie games, but, like, sometimes you play through it once and you go, that is all I will ever need to play of this. Where Roguelike, literally, it's designed, like, no, keep going through. Get the run going better. Get this unique combination of shit.
Yeah, 20 levels of increasing difficulty.
So exactly. Yeah.
Is there a resource in this one that you carry over between runs? Or is it all completely fresh every time?
There, at the moment, not really. So there's there are some things that you can unlock that give you like a bonus, but I wouldn't say it's like a skill tree upgradable resource that carries over. So it's not nearly as in depth as that. But however, with that said, who knows what they put in there in final release, because that is a pretty normal mechanic in there. You know, it's funny. Just quick side note. I've also just picked up Rogue Book on the PlayStation Plus store. That's really fucking fun as well. And that has that resource tree that I know that you're talking about. And yeah, that does keep you sort of invested.
Yeah.
So it would be good to see something like that thrown in the mix as well.
Yeah, it's like the mirror in Hades. But like, I also appreciate that, you know, your progression isn't just from grinding. It's from just learning what items work better together. Like, that's a cool way to do progression for sure.
Hmm.
Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely.
Well, yeah, definitely. Peeps, keep your eye on Inkbound when it comes out mid-April 10th or the 12th or whatever the fuck it was. I did mention it earlier on.
Whenever, sometime in April. It's April Fool's. If we got it wrong, we're joking.
What a delightful J-Paul.
Oh, we're just pranking.
You've
all
been
episode.
Pranked.
Pranks, the theme of this week's episode. This month's episode. Yeah.
This week. Yeah.
April 10th, Lockie, you were absolutely correct. There we go. Yay! No pranks being had around here. Hell yeah. Well, peeps, I got to be honest with you. I feel like I'm being pranked. I feel like I'm being gaslit by Twitter and gamers that I know and love and trust and have a parasocial relationship with. I'm talking about Dragon's Dogma 2. Everyone is loving this game. All the comments I see about this game, as far as the game side of things are concerned, we'll talk about the microtransactions and whatnot in a minute. Very positive. People talking about how dynamic it is, how interesting the combat is in Dragon's Dogma 2 and all the interesting monsters and stuff that you can fight. And I am having such a hard time having fun with it and experiencing what these people are experiencing. I don't fucking get it. I've never in my life tried this hard to enjoy a game. You know, I've just heard it from so many people I trust. ACG, Angry Centaur Gaming, I've been following their reviews literally well before I ever started the podcast. So like probably a decade at least I've been listening to his reviews, and I don't see what he enjoys about this game. So Dragon's Dogma is the sequel that came 14 years after the original Dragon's Dogma, which was basically buried by Skyrim when it came out, but it had a big cult following, so it managed to come back. And it seems like the main thrust of Dragon's Dogma is to kill monsters, I guess, you know, like some big trolls and shit like that. You have three pawns with you who complete your party, and there's six different vocations. You start with four and you can branch out to six. Think the vocations are just classes. I started off with the warrior class, and my initial impression of the combat, the thing that people rave the most about, is I feel like I am playing an MMO. My basic square attack does very little damage. It's all relying on the skills, which, you know, you hold L1 and press square to do a certain attack. You hold L1 and press triangle to do another attack. And they just consume stamina. So it kind of felt like it became a game of, just chipping a little bit away, doing these attacks that, I don't know, it feels like when I'm hitting an enemy, like I'm just hitting a burlap sack of meat. You know, it's got no response to my sword striking it other than to, like, the tiniest little bit of blood going, coming out.
Oh, that's what I hated about the Valhalla expansion. Like, there was no reactivity. It just felt like,
You need to have the enemy, like, even if it's just a little, like, they just move back an inch or so, you know? You just need to have that feedback. It just doesn't feel kinetic when you don't have that. And I don't know, everyone's telling me how great this combat is. The only dynamic aspects I can find so far is smaller enemies. You can pick them up and throw them, and if they hit an enemy, it will make them stumble and it will damage the enemy as well as the smaller enemy that you threw.
Okay.
But so far, the gameplay has come down to, for me, just running at just like a hilarious pace, right? So you and all your pawns have weight limits, right? Those weight limits range from light to moderate to heavy, and that will affect how fast you can sprint and you can move through the world. But the weight limit is so tiny. As soon as you pick up a few different items and like one or two heavier items, you're already in the heavy limit, and your sprint becomes just like a joke. It's almost comedy how slow it is. And that's how I felt so far with the game. It's just glacially slow paced. I don't know. It's excruciating. It really is. The only sort of enjoyment I've found so far with Dragon's Dogma is, you know, just seeing around what's the next corner. Because, you know, every now and again you get a sort of interesting looking vista, or you might run into a big forest troll that's, you know, three times your height or something along those lines. But the only thing it seems that you can ever really find is like a few resources, which you don't really want to pick up that much resources because it makes you too fucking heavy to navigate the world. Or just like another fight, which I'm not having a lot of fun with the fight. So it's like, what's my reward for exploring except more of this basic ass combat? I think before this, my least favorite of an RPG combat would probably be The Witcher 3's. I reckon I had the least fun with the combat in that game. It was like 7 out of 10 combat in a 10 out of 10 game. It's worse than that to me in Dragon's Dogma. I really do not understand the appeal, but I don't have an interesting narrative there to pull me through and let me overlook it like I did in The Witcher 3. The narrative is so fucking boring. You're Neo from The Matrix, because you the pawns listen to you, who are these like magical slaves that you can get to do your bidding. It's super fucking weird.
Have you even fucking seen The Matrix before?
But like that,
yeah.
Trust me,
that's not Neo's character.
It's not Neo's character or his abilities. But like,
he didn't have pawns that he threw away. Like,
my point is, everyone keeps referring to you as like the one. You're the magical,
the chosen one person.
Yeah. In that kind of sense, okay. Not as in the gameplay, no. The Matrix is a sci-fi, this is a fantasy RPG. I had a little bit of fun, like, creating the character. My character's like there's, like, beast characters. My character's like think of, like, a grey-looking tiger version of Geralt from The Witcher. He's got, like, a little grey ponytail thing, and he's a grey-looking tiger, and he's cool. And my pawn looks like Jack Black, and I named him Simple Jack, and he's kind of hilarious. I like him. He's really cool. As a people who've seen, what's it called? Pineapple Express.
Tropic Thunder.
That's it.
No, it's Tropic, no, Tropic Thunder. Thunder.
That's the correct film.
Pineapple
Express. Pineapple Express. Jack Black definitely was not in. Yeah, like that. That's kind of fun and kind of cool, but oh god, like that. If that's it, if like I'm relying on the pawns to just throw shit at the enemies while I just jab at them with my sword. I tried using the bow and arrow, and that felt not much better at all. I guess I could stay out of combat, so I felt like I was getting a bit more done. But the bow and arrow did not feel satisfying at all to use. Once again, you're relying on the skills to have anything interesting to do. One thing that stands out to me that I find really annoying, and they did this in Watch Dogs Legion, in that rather than hire more voice actors, they've just used the same voice actor and pitched the voice either down or up. Ugh. So you just have these characters that don't sound like how anyone would talk. It sounds like they're talking in slow motion, like, oh, maybe we should check that ladder. And it's like, oh, whoa, what's going on?
Okay, so Capcom did another, like, they cheaped out again.
Graphically, it's ugly. The frame rate is absolute dog shit. So it runs at 30 FPS, but so initially it ran with a variable frame limit, so it would run between like 31 and 39 frames per second. But honestly, it was worse than a lock frame rate. It was giving me a fucking headache, particularly going from Elden Ring, which I've been replaying in anticipation for the expansion, going from that with its, like, you know, like pretty decent 45 or 50 frames that it has to this shit. It is very difficult to do. And in a game where
even Monster Hunter World, like, we've been playing a lot of that on nice fluid 60 frames per second, even though it's like a decade old game at this point.
And it's so good having that 60. Oh my god, you miss it so much. And especially in a game like this where it's so fucking slow paced, you feel it even more with that slow frame rate. Not to mention this also has like a stamina system similar to Monster Hunter, whereas if you run too much, your character will have to stop and like kneel over and fucking puff for a few seconds, and that can happen in the middle of a fight. as well too. It's just so slow, and I just don't get it. Why don't I get this? Why is it everyone loves this and I fucking hate it?
Dude, it's not everyone. So when you're saying that, I took a look at the user scores, and I'd just like to give a little bit of context. So I don't know what echo chamber you're sort of in that world, but I don't think it's reflective of the overall population. So 6.2 user score, and I think that, like, the very top review, I just want to read this out. This is great. So they say, this game is amazing. Don't believe the bandwagon review bombers. No, it's not perfect, and microtransactions are annoying, blah, blah, blah. And then they give it a 10.
Yeah, so that's the thing.
And also their name is Useful Idiot, so that also pulls everything into perspective, because I think that's very on brand. So, like, this is the... I don't know. I don't know what to make of this, but other than... You know, I don't think...
Lockie. So there are complaints
people
about...
People want to give it tens and shit.
So at the end, at what I mentioned at the start, that there are complaints about this game.
They're giving it tens and they're saying it's not perfect in the very, like, same breath. It's like, I don't know.
So
it's
Lockie...
It's confusing.
And it's still getting 6.2s. That's how shit it is.
So Lockie...
Zach, shut the fuck up and let Lockie talk.
Basically, what's happened is, so as I mentioned at the start, people are having issues with this game. Just, I've never heard anyone complain about the stuff that I'm talking about. All the complaints about Dragon's Dogma 2 have been around the microtransactions, and I guess it's sort of similar to what I talked about in the PC optimization, in that they're struggling to have any decent frame rate, to the point where there's become a meta thing in the game where people are finding out who all the unnecessary NPCs are and killing them to free up CPU space and have it run at a better frame rate, which I think is fucking hilarious. But
you gotta love that.
It shouldn't have to happen.
Honestly, it sounds like an absolute disaster of a release of a game, and who knows, even with like 1 to 2 years of polish, I'm not even sure if there's still a good game underneath all of that, from what I'm reading here.
I don't know if it's a matter of people... There was just this niche following of Dragon's Dogma 1, and people were just so ready to be excited for a sequel. I don't know. I haven't found any issues personally with the microtransactions so far. I haven't felt a need to use any of them, but apparently they're sort of around... doing cosmetics for your character, so like being able to change your character's appearance is a microtransaction, but apparently it's also really easy in game to be able to afford it, and it's like, well, why would you even make it a microtransaction then? It's just this weird thing. Microtransactions don't belong in single player games, period, I think, but as far as obtrusive ones go, they're not bad. I haven't had the microtransactions be an issue. It's the game itself that's the issue to me, and that's why my brain's breaking. I don't understand. Yeah. Like, how are people having fun with this? So right now, right, I played 40 minutes.
I don't think they are on the whole 6.2.
But that's, read the reviews, the low reviews, Lockie. They're all around the microtransactions. That's the point I'm making. People aren't complaining about the gameplay.
I'm seeing people give them, like, I'm seeing microtransaction bombing, but I'm also seeing a lot of this game is pretty average. I'm seeing like a lot of middle ground average scores, which are usually where the real reviews come into play, because it's not just partisan politics.
Well, that gives me some faith in humanity.
The other thing is that microtransactions, while they're shitty, there are games in it that exist that have pointless microtransactions, and they're still able to score well. So, for example, another Capcom title, Devil May Cry 5, has 8.4 user reviews, in spite of its microtransactions. So, like, if you still have a good game underneath all of that crap, then it'll still rise. I don't think there's a good game underneath all of this, at least from what I'm seeing.
A lot of people do, apparently. I feel like I'm going crazy.
Yeah, but a lot of people are stupid. That's the other thing. So, like, that's okay. We can just say, okay, they're dumb-dumbs, and ride that off and move on to the next product. It's because there's been an absolute fucking drought of major game releases that people haven't... It's been a long time since a really proper, high-polished AAA title has been released that everyone enjoys. That's why you're getting people that are really like, This is the best game ever. But I guarantee you, when we get like another Monster Hunter game, which is the quality version of the Capcom thing that they're releasing, and they're probably just using this as like a demo testing thing graphically for that, everyone will go like that. That'll likely get good reviews and have all the same bullshit that Capcom does in microtransactions and whatever, and it'll still probably get good reviews.
It's not even because a good looking
game. At the end of the day, if the game is good at underneath, I don't think it will impact the bottom line score all that much.
It's not even a good looking game either. It's fucking ugly. Yeah. It's got like this ugly gray brown color palette. There's no like no really good textures or anything anywhere. I saw some clips.
Yeah, I wasn't a fan of how the weapons moved as well. Like I thought playing through the Monster Hunter World game is like so much better just in terms of how the weapons move and everything. Seeing this one with like that weird drifty thing. You know, that shadow effect.
Oh, as I mentioned earlier, the weapons feel like they have no impact whatsoever. It's really weird.
Strange.
Yeah, I've saw some screenshots of how it looks on Series S, and oh my god! Like,
well, that's not fair. That's not fair. The S was already going to be the dud version of the Xbox consoles to begin with. That's not fair. You're judging it by its worst. One.
I played Starfield on Series S, and it did not look anywhere near this bad, and ran at a better frame rate. That's for sure.
That game sucked. So what is fucking that?
So does this game?
It's a well optimized piece of shit,
according to me. The bit I got. So I played 40 minutes before we recorded this podcast, and I feel like it put me in a bad mood. It like made me feel angry and upset. Like the mission I got up to, you got to like sneak into the palace to like fucking talk to a character, but there's no stealth mechanics in the game. It's not a game that's based around that at all. So you just kind of got to walk around a fucking ugly looking palace until you find the right spot to go. And if someone spots you, they just start swiping a fucking sword at you. And you can't even like load a save because there's only one save file. I didn't even mention that. They've got one save file for an RPG. And there's a thing that apparently can happen in this game where it's called like the Dragon Plague or some shit, where you can just wake up and every NPC is dead, including NPCs that are required for quest progression. In a game with one save file. So everyone can die and you have to start a new game. It's fucked.
It's a ticking clock element. It's to heighten the urgency.
to play, like, I guess, devil's advocate here, because I've just been kind of like listening to both of you two. To play devil's advocate here, I think what this is that there are gamers who just want something hyper-specific. It's weird that, like, yes, there is this weird echo chamber of people who love this game, and I haven't played it, I don't get it, I don't care. But, like, for example, I've never really been into Monster Hunter. I can acknowledge they are good, well-made games. The combat, the exploration, the doing all that doesn't click with me. I've tried it several times, don't work. I think what this is here is, for, like, a certain group of people, this just clicks super fucking hard. It, like, they must love, like, the fact that the world's drab as hell, that it's, like, worse Monster Hunter combat, that, like, there is that, like, that some people love the idea of,
like, some people just suck, and they like shit that sucks. I get
it. Well, I'm not even saying that. I will not disparage people for their taste, but I will say there is, but even, like, I know there are 100% people who love the idea of there is a mechanic where everyone just dies and you're fucked. Some people do love the idea of, oh, this game is literally like, this game has an element that could just fuck me at any moment. Some people like that. To them, that's like, that's the tension, that's the thing you've got to work against in terms of the gameplay and the game, whatever. To play devil's advocate, I get why some people do like this, but
that Max does really well, and that's awful.
Exactly.
But it makes a huge amount of money, so people out there love it. Some people love literal shit, and unfortunately, that is the world we live
in. Yeah, and so I don't think, and I think this will show, is that has Dragon's Dogma been selling well? I'm assuming not. Like, I'm assuming it probably sold a little bit better than the first game did, because it's got, you know, years of a cult following, and, like, kind of hype around it because Capcom's kind of up in the world again now that they've had a few really good game releases over the last, like, 2 or 3 years. Like, I can't imagine this game is selling well. Apart from you, Zach, I don't know someone who's bought this. I don't know. No one in my friend group gives a shit. And I've had people who love Monster Hunter, who love Capcom, who love these kind of games. No one cares. No one I know has picked it up.
Okay, so...
And that's where I think it...
There hasn't been any solid numbers, but there's been lots of Dragon's Dogma 2 had the biggest launch in the UK of 2024. Apparently, it had a record-breaking run in Japan, and Final Fantasy VII Rebirth failed to beat that,
That's interesting. A little more interesting. That is actually a bit more interesting.
That is interesting.
So maybe this is... Maybe this is one of those... There. Yeah.
It surpassed Helldivers 2's weekly sales on Steam as well, too.
That doesn't surprise me too much.
Yeah, Helldivers 2 is kind of like it got a lot more popular than it probably ever ought to have. But again, it's because we've had a drought of quality games.
Mm. Yeah, and I think to that is like, it is interesting that, yes, in Japan, it apparently beat Rebirth, which is... kind of fucking nutty if you do think about it.
Yeah, that's mind-blowing, honestly.
I'll say this. There is that, again, that niche aspect to it where it's like, if you have enough people who have, like... For example, no one's... Okay, how do I put this?
Coprophagia exists, and people actually like to eat shit, literal shit.
Sorry.
And so if you factor that understanding of reality, of course there's going to be a niche area of people that like eating literal shit, also liking this game and purchasing it in dress.
So I should clarify, sorry, that was in the UK, Dragon's Dogma beat Final Fantasy
VII. Okay, that
Rebirth.
Makes way more sense. Yeah. That makes way more sense to me. I was like, Japan not buying the shit out of a Final Fantasy, that's
Yeah, that should have
nuts.
Been like the major news story to discuss, because that's like, what's happened, Japan? We thought the thing that you loved was the thing that you loved. What's happened?
Mm-hmm. Okay, good. That reflects my next point, because I was going to make a point of like, well, we did just get another Final Fantasy, maybe people are a little burnt out on the franchise, whereas Dragon's Dogma literally hasn't seen a new game in over a decade. So, like, who's burnt out on Dragon's Dogma? No one. People might hear about the first game and all of its shit, and they're like, oh, I want to pick it up, or, oh, I want, like, a Monster Hunter type game in between my Monster Hunters. So that's part of it, but again, I haven't played it. I'm not going to fucking talk about the intricacies of the gameplay or any of that shit. From what you've shown me and what I've heard, does not sound like my game, so I'm not going to pick it up.
It sounds like an absolute dud and not worth
purchasing. Exactly. Yeah. Like that, and like I said, you're the only person I personally know who's played it.
Yeah.
No one else in my friend group has touched it.
Thing to give a go, maybe, and even then, probably not.
Look, I'll ask the question on Spotify. If you're playing Dragon's Dogma 2 and you're enjoying it, tell us why.
What's wrong with you?
I'm fucking curious.
Tell me why.
No, but question it as, tell me precisely what is wrong with you as a person. I want to understand, you know, which group this is appealing to and how to avoid them in the future.
There's people I know from work who are playing it, and I ask them, like, what are they enjoying about the combat, and, you know, they describe something to me. I'm like, okay, well, that sounds pretty cool. Just why haven't I seen any of that? Like, they're shooting an explosive arrow into a troll's head and then, like, throwing a goblin at it to explode the arrow. Like, well, that sounds cool, but I don't know. I've already
played Breath of the Wild. It's fine.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, look, I don't know if I'm going to stick with Dragon's Dogma 2. Most likely not. I'm probably going to return it next week, I think, and save that money for Stellar Blade or the Elden Ring DLC to come out later on the year. But I don't know. Dragon's Dogma 2. Let us know what you think about it.
Yes.
Yeah. Do you eat shit? We want to know.
Yeah.
Discuss.
You eat literal shit. Yeah. You've gone hard on this one. I've gone really hard on this game that I haven't played.
It's going to get cancelled hard. All the Dragon Dogmas fans are going to come out en masse.
Oh, two of them. And that'll do us for news to reviews for another month. Anthony, thank you so much for guesting on this episode. Please remind the peeps where they can find your podcast.
Thank you for having me, Zach. Yep, you can find the podcast that I do with my friend over at What Do You Think About This Podcast on Spotify, Apple, Amazon. I think they do podcasts. And you could find us over on the Twitter at WDYTATpod. Hit us up for any questions, if you want us to be on your pod or if you want us to be on our pod. Maybe we'll release a new episode sometime this year. Probably not. I don't know what's happening with the podcast, to be completely frank. Kind of dead in the water.
Yeah. Oh, when Invincible's over, let's do one.
All right, that might do it.
Wait till the Boys is having their new season this year. Maybe once all of it's wrapped up, we can do a big Amazon superhero special or some shit. I don't know.
Definitely a maybe.
Nice. Well, if you enjoy What Do You Think About This or you enjoy news to reviews, the best way you can help out either of those podcasts or any podcast that you enjoy is by leaving a rating or review wherever you happen to be listening to it. It costs nothing other than a moment of your time and really does help those content creators out.
And what, if not time, is the most valuable commodity to a finite human mind?
Yeah, but come on, let's be real. You watch about 100 TikToks while you're doing a shit. You can review a podcast in the time it takes to watch one TikTok. So do it while you're doing a shit. Sacrifice that one reel or TikTok, depending on what app you like to use.
Do it while you're complaining about microtransactions and Dragon's Dogma too.
Yeah, there you go. Lockie, any final words of wisdom for our listeners this month?
It's all been fun and games, but I really do have to issue a bit of an apology to people with coprophagia. it does exist. It is pretty funny, though. You have to, it probably feels like an attack on the individual, but it really isn't. It's just, if you look at it objectively, it sounds kind of funny to the human ear, and I'm sorry if that offended anyone, but it is pretty funny.
All right, everyone out there, apologies if you're offended, and take care of yourselves, and take care of one another. Like, if a dude has a big areola that he should cover up, like, it's,
yes,
yeah.
Yes, I'm taking a stance on this, Zach. Yes, they should.
I say free all the nipples. I says free them.
I agree. I think it's like it's gotten to the point where it's like, I don't know.
Yeah,
all or nothing at this stage. Fuck it,
100%.